Hello again, my late night investigators and friends of the darkness. I am Alan, the all-seeing eye of the Panopticon, and this is another episode of Tales from the Panopticon. Today we've got a number of topics to talk on, but first, let's start off with horror writing and how to really bring in that feeling of horror in your games. Now, I've always found that being as descriptive as possible can always help. And this can be a number of different things, like not just saying, oh, you find a dead body, but as you come across the corner, you discover the scent of putrefaction wafting in the air. It stings your eyes in your nose, and it really sinks down into the pit of your stomach. And that's when you would roll a fortitude. But really, the description of anything over, like, if you decide to describe a scenario, don't just say, oh, there's a dead body, or you see the man has a knife. Describe, over-describe it as much as you possibly can, and it really gives a sense of what's going on. Or the opposite can be said: if you decide, or if the party goes into a room and you over-describe one thing but not the rest of the room, it really can change the dynamic of how things are done. For example, I have a game of Chronicles of Darkness in which the party enters the room, and I had described to them the entire room and a single figure while they were exploring the room, and they totally ignored the figure. And that figure ended up being a person that came in to try and kill them. So the party can be distracted, or, you know, people's minds can be distracted when you give them a lot of detail. They're going to want to explore, or if you give them not enough detail, they'll want to come and see what it is, and you can trap them with it. And it really just kind of depends on what it is that you're trying to explain, but when you explain it, you want to do a lot of detail. Those details really help. And not just with detail, setting the mood. It really depends on how you play the story out, how your party is playing the story out. They really have to take it almost kind of seriously, and those that don't, you want to make sure that you increase the threat level as high as you can possibly go to make sure they're aware of how deadly serious it can be. But we'll talk more on this topic later. I do have some writing prompts for those who are interested in writing in the horror genre, and you want to try to, you know, play a couple of games in this sort of area. You know, it doesn't necessarily need to be like a full-on campaign. Writing in genres that you're not familiar with, you should always start off small. Especially if you're going to try and run it as a game, you should probably run it as a one-shot. And that's actually kind of how I got started. But you primarily want to pick up on something. You want to pick a subgenre, I suppose, within the genre, because horror is all encompassing. There is a lot to horror, and anything can be horror. Everything from, you know, your standard hack and slash, you know, killer, mass killer that's running around trying to kill all the teenagers around Crystal Lake, to, you know, a doll coming alive, Well, actually, those are the same. to something like the Ben Drown series that Jiduzapple made on YouTube, that's considered techno horror and is actually one of my favorite genres of horror. This idea of being trapped in a game and having to essentially replay a living hell, also known as recursive horror, I suppose. But I have always loved those genres. So you want to find a subsection of horror that really gets to you, something that really speaks, because I'm not a fan of the gore fest horror, so I'm not going to write in gore fest horror. I'm going to write in something that I enjoy, and hopefully I can bring that sort of enjoyment to my games. Like I said, there's plenty of subgenre to go around. There's, the hack and slasher, techno horror, eldritch horror, Lovecraftian, cosmic, psychological, the list goes on. And the best way to start is to just dive in. For me, it was my wife who got me into the Jiduzapple videos on YouTube, and I really wasn't expecting to enjoy it as much as I did, but it turns out that I'm a huge fan of techno horror. So that ended up being my sort of introduction to it, and then from there, I got really into the Lovecraftian stuff after I got into SCP. And SCP, if you're not familiar, stands for Secure, Contain, and Protect. It is a sort of community of horror and suspense writers, the SCP Wiki, and it is a great place to find inspiration for games. In fact, one of my up-and-coming games that I will be hosting sometime either February or March is an SCP-based exploration game where you play as an MTF, and it's called The Glass House. Or sorry, Investigation of Site-117G, The Glass House. So look forward to that if you decide to come and check out my page on startplaying.games or on my Facebook page. And it involves quite a lot of different details. It's not just we're soldiers going to investigate this strange, anomalous place. It's also that they're trying to hold on. Sorry. It's that they're trying to survive. It becomes a survival investigation, and that sort of horror really kind of hits with the players. It leaves them agitated, but excited. So the SCP really is a great place to start. There's all sorts of different sorts of horror that you can work with there. And SCP and Ben Drowns really sort of opened the doors for me and let me explore into a whole new world. And now I'm into the Lovecraftian stuff. I actually avidly play the Arkham Horror card game. I've been listening to a lot of audiobooks on Lovecraft and stuff like that. But, that should never really quite stop you from pursuing whatever specific genre that it is that you're trying to listen to. Now, speaking of, and leave this segue with me, you should also find a game that particularly fits into the story that you're trying to do, because not every story really fits well with Dungeons and Dragons. So you really want to make sure that your story fits with the system. And sometimes that means learning a new system or finding an old system that you haven't played in a while. And for me, that was moving out of Dungeons and Dragons and into Chronicles of Darkness, also known as World of Darkness, for those of you who've heard it as a different name. And it's an amazing system. It's D10s, pretty simple to learn as a player, really difficult to master as a dungeon master, or in that case, a storyteller. But it is very versatile. You can do a lot with the system. And another system that is actually really great for this level of, or for this style of gaming, is one that I've actually planned to talk about today, and it is an amazing system called City of Mist. Now, City of Mist, I originally got into it because of the art style. It's a neo-noir cinematic game, and the art style is extremely reminiscent of Frank Miller, or, you know, the old Gibson novels for, you know, detectives. It's a very interesting system. It does something that I haven't seen in gaming. And I've played quite a few games, but I'm sure that there are other games that have done something similar. And that is, it doesn't really have an attribute system. It has themes. So you pick a theme, you get four themes, and you're able to choose between a variety of different themes to be able to fit your character. And what this game is about is that you live in this city covered in mist, for lack of better phrasing. But you live in this city, and everybody around you just goes on with their day-to-day lives. And something happened to you specifically that awoken a power that you didn't know was there. Or you wanted something, and this power came to you and let you embody that. And what that is called is a legend. And that legend has given you its mythos powers. And as you continue to play on, you find a balance between the mythos powers and your mundane life. And as you manifest these powers, something happens to everybody else around you that they just don't notice that your powers are going off, so they never know what's happening. Or they see it and then they forget it, like it was some sort of dream. And the way the system works is that as you're playing, things either become complicated or they work more in your favor, and as they do, they shift how your themes go. So as you gain a number of complications to a theme, you end up losing it. So if it's like your mundane life, you lose that theme and you gain another one in the form of your mythos power. And that mythos power ends up making you more awakened to this power. And for your character, if you're trying to remain more human, like you're reluctantly receiving this power, then you want to be more human. You want to be a sleeper. You don't want to be this powerful thing, this avatar of whatever your legend is. And the perfect example is my character that I created in order to learn the system. His name is Avery Murdoch. He's a hard-boiled detective, and his legend is Odin. And so he carries around a hand cannon named, He carries around a hand cannon named Gungnir, And it's essentially a Meteba Utica. Unica. There we go. I can speak today. I promise. It's a Meteba Unica chambered in 50 cal FMJ. And yes, I did say that it was a hand cannon. But it's a massive gun. And the powers that he has allow him to put massive holes in things. But that's really like essentially all he has. He's a detective. His personality is that he's hard-hitting, he doesn't trust people, and it's because of what happened to him in his past. And so, as I start to trust people, I'll start losing that distrustfulness, and it'll get replaced with a mythos power. And I don't know what that is until I play it, which is amazing. Now, the other thing about this game is that it's rules light for the players. There are eight core moves, and you describe what it is that you're trying to do, and the master of ceremonies, or the game runner, the master of ceremonies determines what it is that description fits into. So if it fits into, say, I'm trying to put a round into an engine block as the car is coming towards me, that's going to be a hit with all you've got, or take a risk. So you have to determine what it is that you're trying to do. And speaking of hitting with all you've got or taking a risk, you have tags, little descriptors that you answer in these theme books to be able to determine what it is that your character gets bonuses to. And so, same example of shooting into the car, into the engine block. Well, for Wednesday, as I like to name him, for Wednesday, I'm going to hit with everything I've got. And he's got the tags destructive physical force, hand cannon, and speed loader. Well, speed loader doesn't really work in that because I'm not trying to reload. So I have two tags that are useful. And so I'll add those two to my roll. And the roll is always 2d6. And I will just pop around right in there. On a successful roll, a successful roll is considered 7 to 9, where you hit, but there's a complication, or 10 plus, which is it's a great hit and you get to add a status to it. And a 6 or less is you missed, or, something bad is going to happen, and the Master of Ceremonies gets to attack against you or move against you. And the other really cool thing about this is that it leaves a lot to the players to decide. So if there's a complication, the MC gives you the hard choice, and or the hard bargain, as it's called in this game. To be able to determine what it is that they want to do. And these complications further progress the characters, almost like experience leveling in other games. Now, the other, I keep saying the other great thing. There's a lot of great things in this game. The thing that really caught my eye while I was reading through this book, through one of the books. I bought the complete book collection, and right now I've got the Master of Ceremonies book, the Master of Ceremonies toolkit, and I'm waiting on the Player's Handbook. And in February, though, the other two books are releasing, they're the scenario packs. Pain Town, and I believe the last one is Shadows and Spectres. So there'll be some neat things in that. If you are interested, they release in February. But in the player's handbook, it mentions what's called the voiceover monologue, which is how the game starts. And what it is instead of the game runner discussing what you're doing as the game begins, it falls onto the players to describe what it is they're doing. And what it is you select a player and they essentially monologue. They talk about how their character is feeling, what they're doing. And so it, like, in the case of Wednesday, I've been sitting around doing nothing much, but decided to get outside and go out for a walk around the lake like we used to. It's been a while since I lost her. I used to go out there and sit by and watch the ducks go by and watch the people go by. Man, those were good times. She was a dame. She was my dame. Damn, she was good. But I digress. I'm sitting there in my office, trying to wake up. Bright and sunny outside, and it gives me a goddamn headache. Everybody's happy. Why the fuck are they so happy? Never, ever seen so many smiling damn faces in this shithole of a city. And I never understood why. Anyways, I got old Gungnir sitting there, tore apart on my desk. Two sips into my coffee and bourbon. When my door gets kicked in by a couple of broads and a meth head that look like three pigs stuck in a trench coat. And right there is a great way to open up and just sort of really make it so that the players can enter into the scene and you can and the players can do as they need to. And that's what I'm actually really looking forward to, is it's a very player-centric game. The MC really is only there as a referee and to discuss what it is that the players need to do, or not what they need to do, but what clues they have. And so, because of that, I'm like super excited. I'm very determined to actually write some of original work for this. And eventually, you guys, if you decide to come and play any of my paid games, or if you want to play any of the pre-made ones, the books come with them, the standard ones, the PHB. And the MC Toolkit. There is also on the City of Mist website, you can download a free primer to the starter guide. It's essentially just the PDF of the starter guide. You don't need to buy into anything, and it helps you get into it. And they do have pre-made characters that you can download, I believe. And you can just get right to playing. There's nothing else that you really need to buy. It does help if you have the player's handbook or the MC toolkit. You really what you only need is the player's handbook, and that's what's amazing. The MC toolkit is great if you're trying to do what I'm doing, where you're planning on being completely delved into the system to be able to write. And this is really a system for those who like cinematic investigative games. As I said, it is a neo-noir setting, but it's not necessarily what it has to be for you. It is a very well thought out system, and it's actually based, hold on. The creator actually based it somewhat on another system. It's a homage to D. Vincent Baker and the Apocalypse World. And I actually had a chance to look into the Apocalypse World, and that's also a really interesting system. So give that a look. It's by D. Vincent Baker. Anyways, I wanted to make sure that I covered all my bases on the City of Mist game. If you guys have any suggestions or any sort of, anything in terms of this podcast, please feel free to reach out and hit me up. Once again, you can find me on Facebook at Panopticon Gaming or on startplaying.games and check it out. I will be back online for my paid games starting in February, and we will be running a couple of different campaigns, one of which is a monster, or sorry, Mutants and Masterminds. We'll be doing the Rise of the New Meta in that one, as well as probably releasing the Chronicles of Darkness game that I have been working on. The investigation of Site 117 Gamma. So, if you guys are interested, please check me out there and have a horrifying rest of your day.